Okay, so last year, around January, oh no, around December, the year before last, yeah, around December last year, I started to work with Snacks. And Snacks are applicable to two major things, for privacy and for scalability. So today I'm going to talk about two applications to privacy and one application to scalability. So the privacy projects are called Mixamas and Semaphore. So Mixamas is a generic Ether and ERC20 token mixer, where you can deposit one Ether and later you can withdraw one Ether, and there's no way to connect the deposit to the withdrawal. And Semaphore is a very similar architecture, and we use that to do general reputation mixing. Yeah, so you can become part of a group, and you can signal things about your thoughts or beliefs or other things, and no one can connect. All people will know is that you're a member of that group. And then we also have some rate limiting things there as well, so that we can do like cooler public systems. And then we'll talk about Snacks for scalability. It's okay, you can come in. And we'll talk about Snacks for scalability. So basically we'll build an elliptic curve inside the Snark, and we'll use that to make signatures, and we'll use that also to do Pedersen commitments. And then we sort of join that all together to make something called Rollup, where what and how what Rollup is Rollup aggregates transactions together in order to it aggregates transaction validation. So instead of having to verify 10,000 signatures inside the EVM, you have to verify a single Snark proof. You can come in, it's okay. Oh yeah? Who said that? Okay, so yeah, so that's what we use that's what Rollup is. Yeah, it's a scalability solution. Okay, so first, what is a snark? Okay, so a snark is a way of proving that you did a computation without proving that you did a computation correctly. Yeah, so the verification of a snark is succinct. Oh, wait, I'll say that later. So given some inputs and some code that we predefined before, we'll get some outputs. Yeah, that's what a snark proves. Yeah? Prove that we run the code with the inputs and got the outputs. Yeah. But then we can do cool things, right? We can sort of hide some of the inputs and some of the outputs. Yeah, and this is where we get our privacy properties, right? Because we can start to hide things. So, or we can hide everything, but that doesn't really make much sense. That kind of makes sense, but not in a lot of applications. Okay, so for the rest of the talk, we'll just talk about this code. Yeah? So in the center box inside the Snark, we have this code that defines what we're verifying. So we'll use that to verify that. Yeah, so that's the central problem that we're trying to solve. Yeah, that it's difficult to make this code that verifies. So it's difficult to define the computation that you're verifying you did correctly. So that's what we're going to talk about later. Or that's like the main theme of this talk. Yeah, that we'll go through that and we'll see how it applies to three different solutions. Okay? Oh no, that's the wrong way. Yeah. Okay, so how does this relate to Ethereum? So we can validate Snacks inside the EVM. Although it's a little bit expensive, it costs about 500,000 gas at optimal to do that right now, but there is scope to reduce those costs. And this means we can have privacy and scalability. Yeah, we can have privacy by just hiding the inputs that we have, and we can add scalability because the verification of a proof is succinct. It takes the same amount of time no matter how complicated the code that you are verifying is. Yeah? So for the rest of the talk, we're going to define the code that we saw in the previous figure here. Yeah? We're just going to define the code that defines the snark. Okay? So a lot of the time in blockchain we talk about Merkle trees, right? Because Merkle trees are a good aggregator of information. So this is how a Merkle tree works. So basically you have A, B, C, and D, and those are the members of our group, and we want to aggregate those together to a single root. Yeah? So what we do is we hash A and B together, we hash C and D together, and then we hash A and B, C and D together, and that gives us the root. Yeah. So we hash the hash of A and B and the hash of C and D together, and we get the root. So And then we can make something called a Merkle proof and prove that we're a member of, and we can prove that we're a member of that set. Okay? But so let's go forward. Okay, so let's think about this now. So we can move that a Merkle proof inside a snark. Yeah, and this lets us do some really cool things. Okay? This lets us move, yeah. Okay, so but in order to we can do cool things here, but there's nobody has any permissions here, right? Because A, B, C, and D are all public, and that means anyone can prove that A, B, and C, and D, A, B, C, or D are a member of our group, but that doesn't really help us. We wanna have a way that people have some private information and they can use that private information to signal about, we wanna limit what people are able to do inside our system. So the way that we do that is this, that we come up with this really kind of naive, kind of public key, private key scheme, yeah? And the public key is defined as the hash of two inputs, one called the nullifier and one called the secret. And the nullifier and the secret are just random numbers. We just generate these random numbers and we hash them together to create our public key, and we give our public, and then we do something else with the public key. So anyone who knows the private key of the public key is able to make a signature. But this is a little bit naive, because if people are able to make the signatures, then they can always, then as soon as you make a signature, someone else can copy your signature, because when you make the signature, you reveal your private key. So it doesn't really work. But what we can do is we can put this inside the snark. Yes? And if we put it inside the snark, we can hide the nullifier and the secret, and that means that our signature scheme becomes kind of, that our signature scheme now makes sense, okay? People can make signatures and it doesn't reveal what their private key, so we can do this repeatedly, yeah? Okay, so, but now this doesn't really make sense, as I said before, right? Because people can prove that they're a member of this group, the Merkle, that's defined by the root. People can prove that they're a member, but that doesn't really make sense, because we don't reveal anything. And if you give that proof to somebody else, they don't even know what it's talking about. I mean, they just know that you're a member of some Merkle root, and that doesn't really make sense. So what we need to do is reveal the Merkle root, yeah? And now it starts to make sense, yeah? That now the Merkle root is public to the verifier, and when they verify it, they can see that, oh, this person must know the private key of a member of this group, okay? Oh, wait. Where does it say the time? Is there some way for me to know the time? Okay, I can see. Okay, cool. Okay, so now we can use it. Okay, so this is already enough to do some cool things. Okay, this is already enough to make a mixer. Okay, so this is what the mixer smart contract does. First of all, a user deposits an ether into the contract, and then the contract will allow them to add a leaf to our group, yeah? Then a user can use a snark to prove that they know the secret information of a leaf in our group. And users who prove this can withdraw a coin. And this work, and because the only thing that we reveal in the previous, because the only thing we reveal is the Merkle root, there's no way for anyone to know which leaf led to which withdrawal. But there's a problem with this. Does anybody know what the problem is? Yes? Sorry? Okay, that's also a problem, but that's not the one that's not the one that I contrived to talk about next. So that's definitely a problem. But the way that we solve that is that we limit it to one ether per deposit and one ether per withdrawal. And yeah, so it is a problem, and there's ways to think about fix that, and we can talk about those in a while. But has anyone another a problem? Yes. Yes, exactly. You can do a double spend, right? Because you just prove you're part of the Merkle root. Yeah, and people can just take out coins again and again. As long as you're a single member, you can repeatedly take money out, because there's nothing to prevent you from double spending. Yeah, it's a double spend problem, because you just don't have information about who was withdrawn previously. So, okay, how do we fix this problem? Does anyone have any ideas?
Output balance.
Yes, publish the nullifier. Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I said add balance to the output.
That would kind of work, but if people, because everyone uses the same balance, I could just deposit the same balance as somebody else and just take, I could take all, let's say one ether is a popular amount, I could just take one ether out a bunch of times. But yeah, publish the nullifier, exactly. So we kind of contrived to have this nullifier here previously as part of the public key, and that's why I didn't just call it private key. So what we do is we publish the nullifier. Yeah, we make that public. And then in our smart contract, we remember that whenever someone uses a certain nullifier, we remember it, and then we prevent people from withdrawing with the same nullifier twice. So this actually introduces another problem that we need to think about, but it's kind of outside the scope of the talk. But the problem is that there's a griefing attack here, that someone could see that I'm trying to withdraw a nullifier X and quickly deposit nullifier X again, and then withdraw that, and then my withdrawal would fail. But this is a griefing attack, and it's like $1 for $1. I mean, it's very expensive to hurt people with it. But yeah, it's definitely a problem. But yeah, there's ways to fix it, but it's kind of outside the scope of what we want to talk about. Okay, so now we can check. Yeah, so now every time we withdraw, we make sure that coin hasn't been withdrawn already. Okay, so that's how MixMas works. I mean, that's exactly what we have currently in the GitHub. Okay, so we have some problems with that. One of the major problems is who pays for the gas, right? So the thinking is that if I deposit one Ether, and then later I deposit another Ether, I need to have gas in that account in order to pay for the transaction fee of the withdrawal. And because I can't do that, because now you have a chicken and the egg situation. It's like, I have this anonymous money, but I need non-anonymous money to take it out. So that becomes a problem. There's a way to solve that. I don't know if I talk about that in the next slide or not. No, so the way that we solve that is we do layer two transaction abstraction, which is, it's actually called meta transactions. That's the new name for it. So what we do is a meta transaction where people get a fee for broadcasting these proofs, and the fee is a portion of the amount of money that you deposited. Problem number two is that people can analyze the inputs and the outputs to track the users. Yeah. So this is more like a temporal attack, and you can use these heuristics to, let's say that I deposit one Ether into the smart contract, and then I withdraw that one Ether in the next block. I mean, it's very obvious that, it's kind of obvious who deposited. Yeah, I mean, you can't connect them cryptographically, but you can come up with these sort of clever heuristics about how much you can take in and take out. And that's part of the reason why I prevented the having multiple amounts, because if you have multiple amounts, the amount that you withdraw is also an indicator of who deposited. Yeah, that let's say that I deposited 1.1567 Ether, and then someone later withdrew 1.567 Ether. It's a good bet that it was me, it was my withdrawal. I mean, what we want to do is maximize our privacy set. So those are some thoughts on that. So we have a proposal for the layer two transaction abstraction, and hopefully we'll be able to sort of merge it with someone else's. But anyway, that's kind of current future work that needs to be done. Okay. So can we allow multiple deposit sizes? And that's kind of what I already addressed. It's also trivial to allow ERC-20 token deposits and withdrawals. But we need to be careful about the privacy set again. If these tokens have sort of low volume, then it's unlikely that people will be able to. If these transactions have low volume, then it'll be unlikely that people. Yeah, I mean, people might think that this is really super private, and it might not be. I mean, it's just something to be aware of when we're thinking about these things, because yeah, okay. And then there's other kind of further research questions about how can we increase the size of our privacy set by being able to trade from one currency to another privately, and that would be kind of cool. I mean, that would sort of merge our separated ERC-20 tokens into a way that we could into something that makes it a little bit. That has stronger anonymity properties, but that seems to be a difficult thing to do, but we can see that's sort of future work. Okay, so basically that's the end of MixMas. Okay, so that's all I really have to say about MixMas for now. So it's a general token mixer that you can use to mix your Ether or your tokens. So this is like cool. It's nice work, but it's a little bit it's not really very. It's very similar to Zcash's work, and I mean it's similar to things that already exist. I mean, they don't exist in Ethereum, but it's like work that's been done before, and it's cool. But I would sort of search for other ways to use Snacks to do other things. So the thing that I'm actually more interested in is something called Semaphore, which is very, very similar to MixMas. So instead of depositing one Ether and being allowed to join the tree, we come up with some other rule that lets people join the tree. Yeah, we could have like a sign in with GitHub button, and people who sign in with GitHub are able to join this Merkle tree, and then they can make proofs about things. Yeah, and if they don't sign in with, and we sort of limit the amount of members in the group, so this tree becomes like a proof of GitHub. Yeah, and anyone with GitHub is able to make signals about things. So how do we do this? How do we make like a generic signaling application? And the way that we do it is, so basically we have a lot of what we need already. Yeah, it's very similar to Mixamus. We have the same public key, the same private key. I should do the air quotes when I say public key, private key. We have the same setup, and then we have a Merkle tree where we aggregate all of these together. And then we put that inside a Snark. And we add, you see here in the inputs, we've added the ID of a signal. So the signal is just like 32 bytes, and it says it's the hash of something that you want to say. I mean, it could be the hash of a tweet, or it could be the hash of a vote, or it could be a hash of something else. So we include that. So we include the signal, but we still have another problem. And what is the problem? Does anybody know? Yeah? Anybody know? So think about the difference between what we do with Mixamus. Like Mixamus is, we only want to use Mixamus one time. But this we want to use multiple times. Does anyone have any ideas? So the problem is, exactly. Yeah, so the answer is that we force you to reuse the same nullifier here. And when we force you to do that, you can link different signals together. Yeah? So if I do one tweet and one vote, the nullifier will be the same. And I will be able to link those two things together. And it still has like, it's still anonymous-ish, but because you can connect them together, it's not really great. Because we don't really want to do that. I mean, we want to be able to tweet and vote and do a bunch of other things and have them disconnected from each other. So the nullifier has, links of signals. So how can we fix this? Does anyone have any ideas? Sorry? Hash it with a counter. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we add this idea of an external nullifier. Yeah? So we hash the nullifier with the external nullifier inside the snark. And I mean, this gets a little bit messy. But that works. So we have this external nullifier. And we hash the two together. So now our new nullifier will be unique. Because as long as the external nullifier is different, then each signal is unique. And we can limit people from making multiple signals about the same thing, but we can't connect the same, two different signals about two different topics together. Okay, so now I have two examples. Let me see what time it is. Okay, so this is looking good. So we can talk about at least this example and maybe another. This starts to get a little bit complicated. So let's do an example to make it a little bit clearer. So let's do first past the post voting. Yeah, and let's just think about that. So first past the post voting is just where everybody votes, and then you count the votes, and whoever has the most votes at the end of the count wins. Maybe that's not exactly what. That's what I'm talking about anyway. I'm not sure if that's the technical definition of first past the post voting, but yeah. Okay, so let's say that everyone in this room comes up and we vote for some decision. Yeah, whether zero or one, whether people thought DEFCON was good or people thought DEFCON was bad. Good. Okay, so we have this binary decision, and we come up with some framework. So we say that, okay, we all agree on a same signal, yeah? And the signal is... Yeah, so we all agree on the same signal, and the signal is that DEFCON is bad. And we have another signal, and that signal is DEFCON is good, yeah? And people can vote, and we'll count up all of them together, and at the end we'll see how many people thought DEFCON was good and how many people thought DEFCON was bad. And then finally, we need to think about our external nullifier. So who thinks that we should use the same external nullifier for both signals? Okay, and who thinks we shouldn't use the same external nullifier for both signals? Okay, so if we don't use the same external nullifier for both signals, then people would be able to vote, I think DEFCON was good, and I think DEFCON was bad, and we'll have no way to detect them. So we need to have the same nullifier, external nullifier for both. Okay? And this way you can link the votes together, which kind of sucks, but you also limit people from voting twice, which is definitely a good idea. Okay. So now let's talk about something a little bit more complicated. So we can also do like proportional representation. And proportional representation is another form of voting where instead of voting, like having a binary choice, you can choose among multiple different choices. So the idea, so let's expand our previous example where we had, oh, I think DEFCON was good, I think DEFCON was bad, and now we can add a third one and say that I think DEFCON was okay, but I think we can do better next year. So that people can choose. Oh, actually, that doesn't really make sense. I think it makes more sense for like leadership elections. So let's say that we vote between an elephant, a giraffe, and a kangaroo to be our leaders, okay? And we want so different people like different animals more, yeah? Oh, let's change one of them to a lion. So an elephant, a kangaroo, and a lion. Yeah, because this makes more sense. Okay. Okay, so we're voting between an elephant, kangaroo, and a lion, right? And we want to pick. Yeah, so some people really don't want to vote for the lion. So, I'm explaining the benefits of proportional representation, and I shouldn't do that because it's not really on topic. So basically we can do the same thing, but for the elephant, the lion, and the kangaroo, they each have a different signal, but the external nullifier always stays the same. Okay? Yeah. So that really makes sense, and it's very similar to the previous example. So maybe I should. Okay. Okay, so let's just keep going. I mean, here's the current problems with semaphore. So can we build a proportional representation where you can't link the votes together? Because, I mean, in the previous example, it's clear that we have to use the same external nullifier for each signal, and that kind of lets us link that, oh, I voted first for the kangaroo, and then for the giraffe, and then for the lion. And that will reveal information about the electorate in general, and maybe we want to stop doing it. Maybe we don't want to do that. So that's one thing, but that's really complicated. And can we do quadratic voting like this? That's another interesting question. There's like a bunch of applications for semaphore that haven't really been explored. Again, how do we pay the gas? That is if you do this on-chain, but I've done a little bit of on-chain stuff with this, but in general, it makes more sense to have it as an off-chain scalability solution. Oh no, off-chain signaling solution. I mean, it just works a lot better because you have to pay 500,000 gas for every vote, which doesn't really work very well. And then can we make deniable signatures? So this is more to do with like anti-coercion voting. Oh no, bribery-resistant voting or coercion-resistant voting, where someone can force someone to, either through physical force or through money, or they can pay them to vote a certain way. And this is a bad thing, and we all agree it's a bad thing, and we should think about how to solve it. And there's some ways that we can do it, but they're kind of outside the scope of what we're talking about here. But if anyone's interested to talk about that, we can talk about it later. So now some more limitations of the SNARK work that we've done so far. So the proving time is quite long for Maximus and Semaphore. It takes about, I have some numbers here. Oh, wait, no, I'll talk about that in a minute. Now we've talked about Maximus and we've talked about Semaphore. And we see that we have some cool things that we can do with these. So there's a bunch of like open opportunities to continue this work and to do other cool stuff with it. For example, we could have we could build this kind of group. I mean, we don't really have any groups in Semaphore yet, and it would be nice to have a group of people who could signal about something together. And then we can expand this. So one way to do that is to have a way to limit the amount of people who can join a group. Otherwise, you can just join the group and signal about whatever you want. Yeah, or do sock puppet attacks and things like that, which we know sock puppet attack is where like you see this really interesting discourse on some social media platform, but it turns out it's just one person with many accounts talking to themselves. And it's a way to sort of propagate your ideas and force the discourse on a topic in a certain direction. And in general, I think this is bad, and we should find a way to stop it. So the way to stop it is to limit the amount of people who can join the conversation. But we also want everyone to be able to join the conversation. We just want everyone to be able to join once. So there's a bunch of ways to think about how we limit people from joining them. And one of the ways is, although it's not very strong, it's very weak, is to have like a GitHub-based Merkle tree joining. And we have some other, and then there's some other ways to do it, and I can talk about those later. Okay, so then the next idea is to build on top of some sort of membership requirement, to build on top of that and to make some sort of social media platform. So this would be a little bit different than the ones that we're used to, that instead of having like a person who tweets about something, we could have a group. Yeah, you would join a group, and your group would engage in discourse internally and externally. So you could see a group of people discussing something, and some of the people believe something, and other people believe something else. And I think that if we remove like the idea of the self from this, then we can... I think it will lead to like more open discourse. So this is like a sort of a philosophical tangent that I'm going to go on, but this is my sort of reasoning for this. Is that like, in general in life, normally it's easy for people to coordinate. Inside a group, it's easy for people to say, oh, listen, I think this and I think this, and people have this sort of healthy discourse and then they agree or disagree, and this is very good for everybody. But sometimes this is not possible. Sometimes like, for example, sometimes a minority inside a group can be oppressed by the majority. And the majority can impose some sort of costs on the minority when they try to coordinate. And it comes, and this will lead to a point where the minority are unable to sort of even admit that they're part of the minority because they're afraid of oppression or something like that. Or they're afraid of some sort of consequence for this admission. And there's been a bunch of rights movements that have been centered around people saying that, oh, I'm part of this group and revealing that and paying this kind of high social cost. But that's like not very good for everybody. I mean, there should be a way for people to coordinate without having to pay this high cost. And one of the ways for people to coordinate and not pay this high cost is to make these like anonymous signaling groups. Yeah, and people can anonymously say, oh, I'm part of this group, without revealing which member of the group they are. So they can't be the victim of some kind of oppression because or it's more difficult for them to be a victim of some kind of oppression. And they're also free to sort of express disbelief. And this, I think, is a healthy thing for society in general, because people should be free to sort of coordinate with each other and express their beliefs. And I think that Okay, so that's like the end of the philosophical tangent, but that's why we need to have these sort of anonymity system or systems with strong anonymity properties. So I'm very interested in people who are interested in working on this, in building things with Semaphore, and please talk to me afterwards if you are. There's a few people working on this, and we're happy for other people to join, and there's a lot of open opportunities. So then we can have anonymous credential systems, and this is where you can just sign into something without revealing who you are, and that's a whole other use case that we can have. Then we can have reputation systems, and I found a way to build a reputation system where you can kind of exclude someone from the group if they break some rules. So let's say that I have like a VPN server, and I'm like, I let everybody use my VPN server who's in this room. At the end of the thing, I just go around and I collect everyone's private key, and I say, okay, everyone's allowed to join. But then someone starts to use this VPN all the time, and they use too much of the bandwidth, and I have to remove them from the system. So this post here talks about how we can do that and what we can do. Yeah, so this post, this ETH research post, talks about how we can do that and other things about that. And yeah, so it's sort of the limits and trade-offs and whether this is useful or not. No, this is definitely useful. So this is another kind of direction that we can go in with Semaphore. Okay, so there's a bunch more stuff we can build with Semaphore, and I kind of think that not enough people are working on this. So I'm happy to sort of talk with people afterwards or during the question and answer session about this. And hopefully we can sort of do some work together. Okay, so then also I want to promote this EthSnarks. So EthSnarks is this Ethereum snark project that's funded by the Ethereum Foundation that are moving forward with some of the lower level cryptographic primitives that we need. And they're doing a bunch of good stuff. And if anyone has some C++ experience or wants to learn a little bit about snarks, that this will be a good place to sort of contribute. There's also Zocrates and Circom. I think I have Circom later. Sorry, Zocrates. It's also a cool project. I maybe have them later. So we also use ERC-20 tokens. Oh yeah, so this is other things we can fix with Miximus. So we could make a pull request to include ERC-20 tokens. EthSnarks have re-implemented it in a much more efficient way, and it'd be nice to sort of port their work to the original repository. And then it would be good to merge Miximus and Semaphore together because they're so similar. It would just be good to have a single repository. And then there's other work to do. We can replace the hash function, which I'll talk about in a while. And then there's also a bunch more Semaphore use cases that would be nice to explore and talk about. Okay, so let's talk about some of the figures of what we have. So the hash function, so we need, in order to make a Merkle tree, we need to have a hash function. And the hash function that we use right now is SHA-256. And SHA-256 is very expensive to do inside a snark because it's based upon binary operations, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. So the proving time in Semaphore is about 7 minutes. And the Merkle tree, the depth of the Merkle tree is 29, which means there's like 29 hashes. So it's quite expensive, but the tree is very big. It's enough for like 500 million people to join. So on my laptop, it takes about 7 minutes and it needs a lot of RAM. It's impossible to run it on a smartphone, and this is a problem. So it's about 50K constraints per hash, which leads to 1.5 million constraints altogether. And this makes this is the reason why the proving time is so slow. So we want to minimize the proving time. So we want to reduce the number of constraints. So let's talk about how we can do this. Okay, so inside a snark, we can sort of check these assertions, yeah? And we can check two kinds of assertions. We can say that A multiplied by B equals C, and we can check multiplications and additions. So we can also replace A and B with a bunch of additions of something else, yeah? Where A can be the sums of things. Yeah, so then we can already do cool things with this. I mean, we can already implement any computation with this, right? Because the way that we end up doing it is, okay, for example, can anyone think about how to design an XOR gate with this? I mean, maybe this is probably not a good interactive question, but this is a good sort of learning experience to make an XOR gate at the start and just see how you can make these constraints. Also, I have a list of these problems that are kind of interesting to approach at the start. So if anyone's interested in that, please let me know. So SHA-256 is has a bunch of binary operations. One of them is an XOR, and then there's like sigma shifting stuff and a whole other bunch of stuff. So what we do is, or what other people have done, what the LibSnark people have done, is they've implemented SHA-256. They've implemented it in LibSnark, and they've just built all the basic gadgets and plugged them all together. So we can already do this, but it turns out it's really expensive. Because we just turn everything into binary, and inside the binary we can just do 0 and 1, where we can actually do a lot more expressive things inside the snark. So how can we improve this? So let's talk about what we can do inside a snark. So we can do this A times B equals C, where A and B and C are all these are sums. And we can also, but we have to be careful because we have an overflow. So snarks work over this prime field. And if we get to this number, which is about 253 bits, which is 253 bits, we will overflow. And if we add one more, we'll overflow. So we wrap around at this other number down here, which is about 2 to 253 bits. So that means that we do all our arithmetic modulo p, yeah, where p is a prime number. So does anyone know how this can be? How we can use this? Does anyone have any ideas how we can use this to build like an interesting things? This is a difficult question. Yeah. Okay. So it turns out, and we can use this to build elliptic curves. Yeah, because okay, so if we take example of sec p 256k1, which is about where p is 2 to the 256 bits, all operations are carried out modulo p. So it turns out that we could build a comparative elliptic curve inside the SNARK and have all our arithmetic modulo p done for free. So we just do regular multiplications and additions inside the SNARK, and it would turn out that those operations were done modulo p. So why don't we do this with sec p 256k1? The reason that we don't do it with this curve is because they have edge cases at the when you try and double points. Okay, so if people are like struggling to follow, that's okay. I mean, this is kind of a little bit difficult stuff, and it's going to get easier in a little bit. I'm just talking about how to build these cryptographic primitives for like two more minutes, and then we're going to get back to the regular kind of, okay, now we put this here, and now we put this here, and how do we build things with this? Okay, so the reason why we don't use, the reason why we pick, so we use a twisted Edwards curve. Yeah, we use a twisted Edwards curve. Then these are the formulas, and these are point additions. We use a twisted Edwards curve because it doesn't have edge cases when you double the identity or add the identity to something else. So in general, in SNARKs, we don't want to have edge. If we had an edge case, we'd have to have an if loop. And if we have an if loop, that's not very good inside a SNARK. It's just really expensive to do an if loop because we have to do everything A times B equals C, which is really, okay, there's another example. How do you make an if loop with A times B equals C? It's totally possible, but it turns out that it's prohibitively expensive when you do it a bunch of times. Okay, so this is the curve. These are the point multiples. So inside the curve we need to be able to do two things to do elliptic curve cryptography. The first thing is to do point additions, which is easy. We can use these formulas here, and we can implement those inside the SNARK easily. The second is to do scalar multiplication, and we can do that too. It's just a little bit more complicated. We just do a bunch of double adds. Actually, scalar multiplication just degrades to just additions. But yeah, we can figure that out too. And we can use windowed exponentiation. We could switch to windowed exponentiation, which will save us a lot of constraints. And EdSnarks have done that already. They're now becoming the canonical implementation. Although Circum have a competing one, and Socrates are going to make their own implementation soon. So we're going to have a bunch of these implementations that people can use to do elliptic curve stuff. I hope it's okay that I said that. Okay, it's good. Okay. Okay, so then these are some links that will teach you about elliptic curve operations and how to do that, and just the general background. Yeah, because this is. I mean, the last couple of slides were generally difficult stuff, and it's okay that if you didn't understand them. And now we're going to get back to the. So I just have some future work about this. So, and then we're going to get back to the regular stuff. I'm not sure that link is right, but you guys, you folks can find it. Okay, so future work. So the first thing is that this work should be treated. This work hasn't been reviewed, and I don't think that anybody should use this in production until it's been reviewed a lot. This is like the rule in crypto is don't, or the rule in cryptocurrencies is don't roll your own crypto. And I did, and this is what. Okay, so please be very careful about this. Also, if you have cryptography expertise, I'd be very interested to talk to you about sort of reviewing some of this work and so more people can use it. But at least we should say that it's possible to do this kind of cryptographic stuff inside a SNARK. This is at least an example of how that's possible. So it's for Petersen hashes and a signature scheme, which I'll talk about in a second. Yeah, so it would be good to get some review, and here's where you can review it. And then there's a possibility that we could build bulletproofs in the same way and embed them inside the SNARK, and that's an interesting research problem. And then there's also, it would be cool if we could do like recursive snacks, or at least recurse one layer. And then we can do something like the ZSC paper. There was this paper recently about using recursive snacks to do like private smart contracts. So that's an also an interesting sort of future direction. Okay, and also I want to say thanks to Daria Hopwood and for help and advice about this, as well as the Zcash team who have done very similar work before me and really lit the way for me when I was doing this. It's specifically this issue. You can see it's so cool. They describe everything, every single step of their decision making, and then they also have a blog post about how to do it. So very, very thankful to them. And actually, they're using it now in the wild. So they just had a hard fork a couple of days ago, and now they're using Patterson commitments. I should have talked about that. Oh, sorry. Okay, so what can we actually use this to do? Like, what is elliptic curve inside a snack useful for? And the answer is, as you said, Patterson commitments and signature scheme. So on top of this, I built a Patterson commitments and signature scheme, and EdSnacks have also implemented it. And Zcash are now using this in the wild. They've had it audited, although their work is a little bit different than ours because they use a different curve, and that means that their work is not directly transferable, but it's still like a proof of concept that this is possible. Okay, so a big thanks to them and congratulations to them on their recent hard fork. It's cool. Okay, so next we're going to talk about scalability. So, how much time? 20 minutes, cool. Okay, so next we're going to talk about scalability. So far we've just talked about using snacks for privacy, and now we're going to talk about using snacks for scalability. So the thing that we were missing was a signature scheme. Before that, we weren't able to really use it for privacy, but now we can. Or for scalability, but now we can. So here's what we do. We make this new form, as opposed to before, where we just had the private key be just this simple two images that are two this just secret key that we hashed together. We got the public key. We replace this now with this new construction. This is for a generic database, a permission database. So in the tree we have A, B, and C, and each A, B, and C has a public key associated with it, as well as an object. So the public key says who is allowed to update this object. Yeah, and the object can be whatever you want it to be. It can be like a list of tweets, it can be your token balance, it can be a bunch of other things as well. So this is like a generic scalability solution where you can update these leaves in the Merkle tree in batches. So I think I'm getting a bit ahead of myself. Yeah, okay, so the way that this works is that we have a single prover, and we have a bunch of users. And what the users do is they aggregate signatures together. What the users do is they make signatures and they pass it to the prover, and the prover aggregates these signatures together and makes a ZK snark to prove that they updated the Merkle tree correctly. So let's see how that looks. Oh, I should have. Yeah, so this is what they do. They have the old Merkle root, then they have a snark where they prove that everything was done correctly. Where they validate a bunch of signatures, and then they have the new Merkle root. Yeah, and this proof is proof that they have possession of these. For example, they can't update the tree. They can't update and take someone's money unless they have a signature to send it somewhere. So what the user does if they want to update the leaf is that they sign A, E, E, and B. Yeah? And then our snark does the following things. Okay? The snark checks that the signature matches the public key, pub key here, in B. Oh, yeah. Yeah, checks that the signature matches pub key. Generates the leaf B by hashing it with the object that the user probably also provided. Checks that leaf is in the tree. And then replaces that leaf B with a new leaf E. Okay? So, you see what happens. You can go like this. Yeah? Okay, and what we do is we have a snark that proves that before we had root and now we have updated root. So we use a smart contract to verify each transition, and now the operator now we know. We have a smart contract that validates each transition, and now we have a system So this is just a general scalability system. So we know. So now the operator isn't able to update the tree unless the users allow them to. Unless the user gives them a signature and says, "Okay, update my leaf A to E." Yeah. So that makes sense. I mean, but this really doesn't work as it is, right? Because this really doesn't work as it is because it costs 500,000 gas to validate the snark, right? And it costs like less than 10,000 gas to validate a signature inside the snark, inside the EVM. So why would we use this? Does anyone have any ideas? Okay, so batch. Yes, batch them up. Because the verification of a snark is succinct, we can include as many as we want inside the snark. Yeah? So basically, instead of using this for one single transaction, we use this for like 10,000 transactions. Yeah, so we can aggregate together 10,000 transactions and we can use this to update the Merkle root. So this is where we get our scalability benefit. Yeah, so now it takes 500,000 gas to validate 10,000 transactions, which is great. I mean, it's great. Things are getting cheaper. Okay, so now, just to summarize, to link the cryptography stuff to here. So what we did before when we defined this twisted Edwards curve that we were using is that we wanted to make a signature scheme. And we needed to make a signature scheme so the users could sign something and the prover wasn't able to sort of steal people's money and move things around. So we made this signature scheme, and now we just validate a bunch of signature schemes inside the snark, and we update our root. Yeah, old root, new root. Perfect. So we do that a bunch of times inside the snark. We have like a for loop, and we end up with just a single proof that we had transition A to B correctly. New root to new root correctly. Okay, so what are some problems with this? Okay, so some problems with this is the proving time. So the proving time is quite high. I think you can prove on like regular hardware to 20 million constraints. And that's about enough for maybe 12 transactions. But that's not our limiting factor here. So because it turns out that we can use AWS, Amazon Web Services, to batch these, or another cluster, yeah, just any cluster, to batch these transactions together and to make the proofs. But this costs money, but it doesn't cost a lot of money. It costs like $1,200 per proof, which is totally fine. If you're doing $1,200 for 10,000 transactions, it works out really cheap. Yeah, okay, so we can use Pedersen commitments. It's difficult to have a hash function that's efficient inside the snark, inside the EVM, but that, I should talk about that in a while. Okay, so now our only problem becomes this. Our only problem is now the data availability problem. Yeah, that we know that the operator can't steal people's money, but the operator is able to block people from getting their money. And does anybody know how they do this? Yeah, okay. Yeah, they refuse to publish it. Yeah, they refuse to so someone does a Merkle tree update, yeah, and then they refuse to publish to people the Merkle leaves that they need to make the proof, yeah. And when you refuse to do that, nobody is able to move their money anymore. So now let's talk about sort of solutions to this. Oh, I'm almost done. This is the last time. Okay, so one of the ideas is this thing called roll up and roll back. Yeah. So with roll up, what you do is the prover continues to update the Merkle tree. They do these transitions, and then we have what is called it's similar to plasma exits, and we cannot merge and split leaves. It's just like plasma cache, I think, where you have like these independent leaves and you can't join them together, but you can send them to other people. Okay, so one solution is roll up, yeah, which I'll talk about in the next slide, and the other solution is to pass all the data from the EVM into the snark. Yeah, and Vitalik has a nice post about this, and I'll talk about this in a little bit as well. So how does roll-up rollback work? And roll-up rollback is actually called SNASMA. Roll-up rollback is the old name. So we have a priority queue, Okay, so listen, so the operator aggregates everyone's transactions, and they go block at a time, moving forward with the chain. And then at some point in the future, let's imagine that our operator becomes malicious and they refuse to publish the Merkle path or the Merkle leaves that you need in order to exit your coins. So what do? So we have this thing called a priority queue, a priority exit queue. And basically, anyone who enters the priority exit queue is able to anyone who enters that queue, the operator must serve that queue within a timeout that we define, like a week, 2 weeks, something like that. And if the operator doesn't fulfill that request, what we do is we slash the operator and we say that, okay, data is now unavailable. Yeah? And what we do is we do two things now. Yes. And we start the rollback mechanism. So this is probably the next one. So rollback. Okay, so here's let me set the stage. So we have the operator has been running for a while, for five states. Yeah, we started at S1 where the one person deposited one coin. Yeah, and we know that data is completely available then. Then we started to move forward. The operator makes snark proofs and validated them on chain, and we ended up at state 5. Yeah? And at state 5, the operator refuses to share the data. So at state 5, we enter the priority queue, and the operator refuses to exit us. So what we do is we slash the operator, and we have this kind of auction for a new operator. Yeah, someone else to take over the chain. When you bid in this auction, what you have to do is you say the state that you want to begin from, the state that you want to take over from. So you don't have to continue from state 5. You can continue from any previous state. So you say the state that you want to continue from, and you say the state that you want to continue from, and you say how much you want to put as your deposit. Yeah, and we have like this idea of a limited deposit and something like that. That's fine. So we finish the auction and we select the bidder who selected the newest state with the highest bid. Yeah? And then what do? Let's say that the new operator. Yeah, so the idea is that the new operator will never ask to continue from a state where they have all the data available to them. From a state where they don't have all the data available. Because they will be trivially slashed immediately. Yeah, and they'll lose all their whole deposit. So then let's say that the new operator comes and they say, okay, I'm going to take over at state 3. So what do we do? We have to transition from state 5 to state 3. So what we do is we say that, okay, anyone who has an in-flight transaction in state 4 or state 5 is able to exit. Yeah? And we have another period where we have this kind of plasma-style exit where people come forward and say, okay, I want to go, I want to leave, and that works out fine. So then we roll back to state 3 and the new operator continues. Yeah. And if no operator comes forward and says, listen, I want to continue, we just go all the way back to state 0. And that's just basically a plasma exit. It's more ordered, though. Yeah. Where was I? This one. Yeah. Okay, so that kind of works, but there's a bunch of problems with that. And one of the major problems is that you can't split and join leaves together for a reason that I can discuss afterwards if people have questions about it. And another problem with that is... Another problem with that is like this idea of finality, that you don't know that, you're not guaranteed that your state is not going to roll back. But we can have these kind of weaker finality assumptions, and you can say that, listen, if I have all the data for a single state, I know that I know that someone will come forward to take over from another state, or I can come forward and take over from that state. So people will know that, okay, we only roll back a little bit. Okay, so that's kind of how roll back SNASMA. That's how SNASMA works. Okay. Okay, so now the other option is to do data availability inside the chain. And what we do is we just pass all the variables from the EVM to the snark, and we verify, and this way this way the data is definitely available. We rely on Ethereum's data availability guarantees. Yeah, but this is not great for two reasons, for some reasons. It costs a lot of gas per transaction, which is sort of limits our scaling, not at the amount of proofs that we can make or the size of proofs that we can make, but at the cost per transaction. So we're limited by gas inside the EVM because we have to pay gas every transaction that we include. Yeah. So I talk about compressing here, but I'll sort of leave out the nuance of that. But we have to compress the data too inside the EVM. But compressing is just hashed together. So that works. That works too, and this is kind of the approach that we've sort of moving forward with at the moment. So this is comparisons with plasma, which I already sort of did. Okay, and then I have two examples. So this is like, let's finish. I won't do the examples because we only have like 5 minutes, 8 minutes left. Yeah. Five or 6 minutes left. Okay, so let's just talk about, these two examples quickly. So one is Zika Nifty, and this was done at a hackathon in Berlin by a bunch of people. And I would say their names, but I'm not sure they want me to say their names, so I won't. Okay, so... so basically they did a non-fungible token with Rollup, and it works pretty well. And we also are me and a few people are working on making some sort of generic token with this, where we can just batch token transfers together. And if we were going to use data availability on chain, as I said before, and each leaf has a variable amount, users can trade tokens to each other, but not split. Oh no, users can split the tokens. That's not right, that's side. And users can exit a leaf, but the leaf is... No, wait, that's not... This slide is wrong. Yeah, okay, sorry about that. Okay, so let's talk about rollup problems really quickly, and then we'll have some questions. Okay, so one problem is that the proving time is quite big, and we need to outsource this as quite long. It takes 1 hour and a half to prove on AWS, and it costs like $1,500, a little bit less than that. And we want to reduce this, and we think that we can reduce it, but it will get more expensive. And then there's other ways to reduce it too. Instead of using the cluster, we can use GPUs, FPGAs, and ASICs, and those are all open areas of research that or of implementations that I'm interested to talking to people about. If people are interested in doing that, that's cool. Come and we can talk about it. Can we add strong anonymity properties to this system? That's another research question, because everything is completely transparent here. Just because we use a snark to aggregate the data doesn't mean that we still have the anonymity properties that we had before. So is it possible to add those anonymity properties back? That's another interesting question. So we have optimizations. Yeah, so it's interesting. This at Snarks project have done a lot of work with these optimizations. This has moved forward quite well. Also, IDEN3 have another implementation. At Snarks are working on implementation. IDEN3 are working on implementation too. And we're going to replace SHA-256 with Pedersen commitments in some places. That's all good. So future work. Yeah, so we want to implement both approaches. Yeah, so if there's someone who's interested in implementing the other approach, the SNASMA approach, we'd be interested in that too. I'm interested in hearing about other use cases other than just scaling and tokens and stuff like that. I'd be interested to hear other use cases that we can use it to aggregate transactions together and aggregate like votes and things together. Though that comes with a bunch of problems still, but yeah, we could do that too. Non-fungible token, maybe we can make an exchange with this. Snarks request, so this is like a request, so it would be good to have the gas cost reduced in the EVM. Newer curve for more security would be nice. So we use LBM 128 right now, and it would be nice to move to BLS, the one that Zcash uses, and that means we could reuse a bunch of their signature schemes and stuff like that, and a bunch of their tools, and we could all just be working on the same curve. That would be great. And it would be good to have a hash function pre-compiled that's efficient inside the snark, something like Pedersen commitments. That would be cool. Okay, that's it. Okay, thank you. Okay, so do we have time for questions?
Yeah, we have time for maybe one or two questions.
Okay, if people want to ask me more questions, I'll just hang out outside for a little while and we can talk. Okay, so who has any questions?
You mentioned one possible use case is quadratic voting.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you have any like design ideas about how you can ensure that someone doesn't create multiple identities in order to skew mm-hmm. quadratic voting.
Okay. So there's some ideas about this. One thing we could do is, and it's a bit creepy, is we could use biometrics in order to limit the amount of people who are able to join our group. But this has problems too, because people can just make fake biometrics. Yeah. So we'd have to have some kind of real world biometric testing station, and that's not really very... I don't know. That has some problems. It's gameable. The other thing is that we could have this kind of these kind of parties where everyone comes and every attendee is able to join the group, but that kind of limits us because every attendee, you could just get your friends to come and take their keys or take their position in the group. Another thing that we could do is we could have this like really high barrier to entry and say that you have to have accomplished X, Y, and Z in order to join. But that's not very good either, because that means sort of limits the amount of people that can join and can be sort of commit to it. So yeah, I mean, it's a difficult problem, I think. And but it's one that's important to sort of figure out and solve. So I think a good approach would be to do like some sort of trusted hardware with some sort of biometric database or something like that. I mean, it's not very nice, but it could, if we need to do something like that, we could do that. Yeah. The white T-shirt. He asked first, and then you can.
Is the stuff that Starkware is working on, could that potentially improve the efficiency of this, or is it completely different?
So they would improve the proving time, but currently the proofs are a little bit big. And it's still, I mean, I'm totally interested in seeing what they have when they're ready for that, but it's still moving forward. I guess it would be good to talk to Abiyu, who's here. He sort of has some more ideas about that. Yeah. Okay, cool. Sorry, that's my time. If anyone wants to talk, I'll be outside for like the next 30 minutes.